Canadians go to the polls on September 20th, and this election campaign was pitched by Justin Trudeau as a chance to have a say in the direction of the country in the next 17 months. Based on the first third of the race, do we have a sense on what that will look like? I'm Dave Breckenridge, and this is 10-3. In the first of a series of election panels, National Post columnist Sabrina Madeau and Edmonton Sun columnist Lorne Gunter join me to discuss how the leaders have fared in the first few days, why the Liberals have looked unprepared, and how Erin O'Toole and Jagmeet Singh have positioned themselves against Justin Trudeau. Don't forget you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or even on Amazon Music now. I'd love it if you could leave us a rating, a review, and tell your friends about us. All right, so there's a lot to get to. We are nearly a third of the way through this, not a surprise campaign, but one that, you know, was called a little earlier than a lot of people would have expected or hoped. A lot to talk about. We want to look at some of the performances of the leader so far in this campaign. And obviously, because it's his election, because it's the one that he decided to call, you know, we're going to look at Liberal leader Justin Trudeau first. Sabrina, on the day that they called the election campaign, Trudeau talked about how he wanted voters to have a choice about what the next 17 months looked like, and even the next 17 years. But despite that, and we're almost a third of the way through, I haven't really heard him talk about what he wants the next 17 months or 17 years to look like. Are you surprised that he used that argument to kick off the campaign and then kind of that has fallen to the wayside?
Yeah, I agree with you that we haven't heard too much about what he wants the next little while to look like. And it was a bit surprising that the Liberals were actually the last of the three major parties to issue their platform, when they're the ones who have clearly been planning this election for who knows how long, weeks, if not months. Mm-hmm. And I wish we could have heard more. I don't think it's going very well for him as a result, because the voters do want details. If you're going to call an election, they expect you to be prepared. I also think the line about wanting voters to be heard is a little bit rich coming from Trudeau, when one of his major promises when he first got elected was, of course, electoral reform. And that's one that he never delivered. Yeah. So to now talk about how he wants Canadians to have a voice just doesn't strike me as authentic.
Lorne, what do you make of the idea that, you know, the Liberals seem ill-prepared for a campaign that they wanted?
It staggers me in a way, because when you control the timing of the election, as the Liberals did, you should have everything ready. You should have all of your imaging, all of your policies, all of your messaging, all of it ready to go on day one. And as you said, we're a third of the way into this campaign, and I'm not even sure they have that all ready to go yet, which is doubly surprising because the Liberal war room has been masterful in the last 7 or 8 years at controlling the discussion, controlling the themes, having everything ready. As soon as one of their rivals sticks his or her head up, you know, they've got secrets that they reveal that undermine that person. I mean, they had Andrew Scheer's number in the 2019 election mm-hmm. from day one, and they put him on the back foot and he never got off. In this one, they're the ones who are on the back foot, and I don't get the sense at all that they expected this. I mean, I think they bought their own polling. They thought that they could cruise to victory. This was just going to be a cakewalk, and they didn't have to be prepared. And when you go early, voters don't care for it much. They'll forgive it, but they don't always like it. But when you go early and you are unprepared, it's staggering, as I said at the beginning.
As Sabrina said earlier, the Conservatives and the NDP were kind of first out of the gate with the platform, and especially with the Conservatives, considering in the last election, we didn't see a full Conservative platform until late in the campaign. They did what I thought was a smart thing in putting their whole platform out early, but they've been on the defensive ever since, countering Liberal attacks over abortion and most recently, healthcare. Lorne, we've seen this movie before with Liberal campaigns against Conservatives. Do you get the sense that it's going to register and be relevant with voters this time out? Or are we kind of tired of seeing the same old, you know, the boogeyman, I guess, for lack of a better word?
My fingers are crossed that voters have gotten sick and tired of seeing this boogeyman, whatever it is. You know, with Scheer, he just fed into it in the last election because these questions would come up about social conservative policies. And he was unprepared. It was like, oh, I never expected anyone to ask me that question. I don't know what to say. Whereas O'Toole's ready. I mean, O'Toole has had forceful answers when the Liberals started 3 or 4 days in to whisper that, oh, my goodness, he says he's pro-choice. But you know that we found this footnote on page 187 of the Conservative Policy Manual that says that they might let doctors not perform abortions if doctors feel conscience constraints about performing. Ah, that's probably a secret agenda. And O'Toole had an answer for it. The rivals are prepared this time. You know, their opponents are prepared in a way that they weren't in 2019. And I just think that that liberal sanctimony and virtue signaling and smugness has just worn thin with a lot of voters.
Sabrina, what about you? Where do you stand with Erin O'Toole's performance so far in the campaign, both in terms of the issues that he's focused on and also in terms of how he's handled some of the Liberals' attacks against him?
I think Erin O'Toole is performing incredibly well so far. I think he's taken the Liberals by surprise, but I also think he's taken a lot of his own party by surprise. And I think his stop in Quebec City was a particularly strong moment when the Liberals were bringing up the abortion issue. And he just said so emphatically that he supports women's rights to choose. And that will stick with Canadians. And I think that swept that issue to the side and the Liberals lost any steam they had going there. And what really strikes me is that Trudeau's campaign hasn't controlled the dominating narrative in the news cycle a single day since the campaign's been called. They've been backpedaling, while O'Toole's campaign seems to be much more in control. The question always, though, with the Conservative Party, especially when they're relying on hopefully getting some swing voters to move over who aren't necessarily into the party's more social conservative side, is he has to keep everyone in line. All it takes is for one candidate to have a moment where they say something completely separate from what's in the official documents, and that could turn things around. So if he can stay a strong leader and keep everyone on the same page, I think things are looking quite good, actually.
Lauren, we've seen this before with conservative leaders. There's the whole idea around message discipline, but there's also this idea of, and you saw with Stephen Harper, trying to appeal to these middle-of-the-road voters and how much they give up of so-called bedrock conservative policies. Do you feel that Erin O'Toole is kind of trying to play both sides a little too much, or that, you know, the conservative policy book kind of steps away from some of those bedrock principles, smaller government, less spending, things of that nature?
Yeah, I mean, it clearly steps away from that. But in stepping away, what has he achieved? I would say that he has let a lot more voters think about voting conservative. I mean, it's always a trade-off in politics. Do you give up your core principles in order to win power, which is now useless to you because you don't have your core principles anymore? That's always the trade-off you have to be thinking about, and I'm sure he's thinking about that. I still cannot forgive him for doing a complete reversal on the carbon tax. But as a columnist who's probably been harder on him, certainly a right-of-center columnist who's been harder on him than anybody else, I've called him a dud, the cipher, a bunch of things, I have to say I'm impressed so far. And ordinary voters don't pay as much attention to the minutiae in party platforms as those of us who make a living doing this do. And, you know, in addition to being a pundit, I'm also a passionate conservative. And so I look for things in their platform and am disappointed when they're not there, or doubly disappointed when there's lefty things in there. But I'm not sure that ordinary people who are still, it's not even Labor Day yet, and yeah, ordinary people are still sitting at the lake or in their trailers or whatever. I mean, I think they just get an impression now that, hey, here's an ordinary kind of guy, sort of like us, who seems pretty casual and kind of friendly. Maybe he understands our positions and what we need to see happen. And so I think this is first impressions, and he has won the first impression battle.
Moving on to the third party, Jagmeet Singh and the NDP, I feel like he's got two goals in this race. One, he's got to try and peel off a lot of progressive support from Justin Trudeau, make Justin Trudeau look as though he's the guy who doesn't keep his promises, who doesn't do the things he says he's going to do, and who isn't really looking out for the interests of progressive voters. And then he's got to sell himself in the NDP as the party who can do all those things and also not bankrupt the country. Sabrina, What is your take on Jagmeet Singh and kind of achieving those two goals so far?
I don't think he is. I think that the NDP stood to benefit a lot in this election with especially younger voters. I'm a millennial who are unhappy and disillusioned with Trudeau and the Liberals, but still wanted to vote on the left side of the spectrum. And he just doesn't seem to be gaining huge ground there. I mean, we've seen polling now that the Conservatives are actually leading among millennials and some Gen Z voters, which is shocking. And that's a huge failure on the part of the NDP. I don't think his messaging has been great. I don't think he's managed to really connect with especially young Canadians. And he's also taken up some really weird side issues, like the other day when he was trying to say they should rename the Danforth riding over Leyden, which that's an election is just not the time to bring that sort of thing up, if ever. And it makes them look like they have their priorities all in a mix.
And Lauren, what about for you? I get the sense you're not a big fan of Jagmeet Singh and the NDP anyway, in terms of their policies and their politics, but do you feel that they're doing enough to peel away voters from the Liberals to help their cause on September 20th?
I mean, you're right. I'm not a big fan, but I'm a big cheerer for the NDP this time, because the only way that Conservatives win in Canada is when the NDP takes the left-wing vote away from the Liberal. And like Sabrina said, I'm equally surprised that Singh has not connected better with younger voters. But younger voters, they're sort of a two-stage with them. Either they're going to switch over, or more likely, they're just not going to vote in large numbers. They're not excited by anybody, and so they just stay home. That's also good for the Conservatives, because those young voters, by and large, would have voted Liberal in the last two elections. If they're not voting, it's just as good as if they're voting NDP in terms of the Conservatives' outcome. But the other thing that I think Singh is connecting with is older progressives. He's rekindling some of the old 70s and 80s NDP dreams. He's bashing successful people. And he's saying, we can do all of these. Like, we can outbid the Liberals. How you actually imagine you could outspend the Liberals, I don't know. But he thinks they can outspend the Liberals and have it all paid for by the richest of the rich, people who have more than $1 billion in Canada. It's simply not possible. The mathematics is not there. Mm-hmm. You could tax everybody over $60,000 a year, which is very, very, very middle of the road income. You still wouldn't have enough money for the Liberals and the NDP's promises. So that's just a fallacy, a fantasy on his part. But people don't sit down and do the math on the back of an envelope while they're watching late season baseball. So he doesn't have to make sense. He simply has to win over voters. And I think he's winning over some of the older progressive voters who used to vote NDP and gave up because they thought Trudeau was the better way to achieve their agenda. So that's bad for the Liberals, too. I think the Liberals are being hacked away at in three places. They're being hacked away at in the swing voters by Aaron O'Toole. They're being hacked away at by young voters simply by disillusionment they have with all the promises Trudeau made and never kept. And they're being hacked away with older progressives by Jagmeet Singh. And in an election where, you have to count every vote and you're hoping to squeeze out an extra 15 to 17 seats, that's bad news for the Liberals.
Part of that electoral calculus is the idea of Quebec. And Sabrina, you've taken a look at how the Quebec race is shaping up. Do the Conservatives stand to gain any ground in this race? Do the Bloc Québécois pose a threat to the Liberals or the Conservatives? What's going on there with another party in the mix?
Well, things are looking a lot brighter for the Conservatives than they were even a few weeks ago. And that's because of a few things. One is that Trudeau is becoming increasingly unpopular in the province of Quebec, to the point that he's actually less popular now than his party. In prior elections, he was more popular than his party. Another is softening of Bloc support. We're not seeing as much there. They might actually lose some seats. And while it still looks like more of those seats would go to the Liberals at this point, the Conservatives do stand to pick up a few. And O'Toole is actually being quite well received in Quebec. Again, he had that very successful stop in Quebec City. But going all the way back to his leadership campaign, he really showed that he took Quebec concerns seriously. He spoke to Quebecers. he's determined to show that he's more socially progressive, which is another big thing in Quebec. You can't be a social conservative in Quebec and win. So he could gain ground there. He entered this election as an unknown to your average Quebecer on the street. He could, you know, walk down Main Street and no one would turn ahead. And that presents an opportunity. He had a blank slate, and I think he's saying and doing the right thing so far, where perhaps some seats could turn.
All right. Now we're about a third of the way through. There's been successes for each of the leaders on certain days. There's been gaffes. Who has had the biggest stumble so far in this race? Sabrina?
I have to say Trudeau. And I don't know if I can pick one stumble. I think the calling of the election was one, but not just because of it being obviously kind of a vanity project on his part, but because of what's going on in Afghanistan at the same time. Mm-hmm. I think the juxtaposition of the news there and him being on the campaign trail just really has not been a good look. And his other major gaffe was that video that went viral of him about a week ago where he said he doesn't really think about monetary policy. And I know the full quote was that he thinks about families instead, but the fact is, you can't separate the two. And Canadians are very concerned about things like inflation and interest rates. And of course, the Bank of Canada's mandate is up for renewal after this election. So the fact that he's not thinking about it, I mean, it just showed he's not very serious and he just wants to pander again to the sexy issues. And he doesn't always give apparently as much deep thought to some of the more serious ones that actually hugely impact working class families.
And what about for you, Lauren?
I have been surprised by the Liberals fumbling so far. As I said earlier on, they controlled the timing of this election. And you would think they'd then have everything in place. But I think their inherent smugness has finally caught up with them. They actually believed that they could go into this election without all that much effort, that O'Toole was as unpopular as could be, even more unpopular perhaps than Scheer had been last time. And, you know, no one was going to take the NDP seriously. They'd fight some fights in Quebec, but that was about it. And it hasn't been a coronation for them. And they're stunned by that. They're stunned by the fact that Canadian voters, more Canadian voters than before, are not as enamored with the Liberals as the Liberals are with themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been an issue for them.
Now, we're about 2 weeks out from the English language debate. Do either of you feel there's going to be like one kind of key issue that's going to gain steam in the next 2 weeks that will kind of be the battleground that they argue over in the debate, Lauren?
No, I think we're going to see the Liberals at that point, if they're still desperate, and I think they will be. I think that's when they will try and find some race card to play against O'Toole. That's the only one of their hidden agenda topics that they haven't brought up yet. They bring up abortion, you know, they bring up race, they bring up all sorts of red herrings to try and distract voters from the real issues. And I don't think they're going to be as successful doing that this time. I just think that the Trudeau act is wearing thin. It is a thin act to begin with because he is not the cleverest prime minister we've ever had. And now he seems to be surrounded by people who are not as clever at managing a campaign as the Gerald Buttses of the world used to be. I just think Aaron O'Toole is in a very good position going into the English leaders debate so far, because expectations are so low. If he comes out and he holds his own, people say, oh, wow, he really did well. Whereas maybe he, in an objective way, he didn't. But subjectively, he has low expectations. And that's in many ways a good thing to have when you're an unknown.
Sabrina, last word to you on this. Where do you see the campaign going from here in the next phase of the race?
I think one issue I expect to hear a lot more about is the housing crisis. It's always been a key issue for younger voters, and all of the three major parties have been late to the game on it. And the Liberals have been even later, and they just released their plan this week, which raises the question, of course, why didn't they do any of these things in the last few years as we watched prices spin out of control? And I think they will be asked a lot more questions about it. We want to hear more details. Young Canadians are very skeptical. They've been told so many times, don't worry about it, or just take on more debt or bigger mortgages or longer mortgages. And I expect that to be a really key issue, especially if younger voters are going to be the decision makers this time around. As we know, millennials are now the largest potential voting bloc in the country. Whether they actually turn out remains to be seen, but the potential is there for them to decide who wins this thing.
Right on. Lauren Gunter, Sabrina Madeau, thanks for your time.
Very good.
Thank you.
10-3 is produced by Sean Knox, theme music by Bryce Hall. Thanks to my guests, Sabrina Madeau and Lauren Gunter. More from them at nationalpost.com and edmontonsun.com. I'm Dave Breckenridge. Thanks for listening.